Welcome to Everyday English with Erica and Elizabeth, the podcast series that explores how native speakers use English in everyday settings.
Welcome to this, our first episode in the series, Everyday English with Erica and Elizabeth. I'm Elizabeth.
I'm Erica.
And in this series of podcasts, we're going to explore everyday English and the challenges and opportunities that it can pose for non-native speakers of English. For this particular episode, we will focus on the use of phrasal verbs, hearing from both a native and non-native speaker of English. But first, maybe you, Erica, would like to explain what we mean by everyday English.
Sure. Everyday English is the English used by native speakers in work and social settings. It includes a lot of colloquial terms and uses phrasal verbs and idiomatic expressions. Although it's not as formal as professional or academic English, it's still used in the workplace. Elizabeth, can you tell us what a phrasal verb is?
Of course. A phrasal verb is a phrase with a verb and a particle that has its own meaning and acts as a unit. For example, to look up means to search for information. It's not obvious what this expression means. It's not literal. Whereas to look up at an aeroplane, look up is not a phrasal verb. It's a verb with a preposition. It has a literal meaning, to raise your eyes to view something. But Erica, why do phrasal verbs cause problems for non-native speakers?
Well, Elizabeth, the meaning of a phrasal verb isn't obvious. The particle isn't easy to remember. For example, up, on, off, in, and so on. If you change the particle, the expression can mean something very different, which we'll hear about in the interview now.
Yes, let's hear from a non-native speaker of English, Nico, talking to you, Erica, about an experience in learning and using everyday English.
Welcome, Nico. It's nice to have you here with us today.
Hello. Hi. Very nice to get connected with you.
So, Nico, tell us a little bit about yourself and your work.
Sure. So I am a software engineer working in the San Francisco Bay Area. About me, so I was born and raised in China, and I came to the United States probably about like 9 years ago, and I went to a school in New York, and then like I went to the West Coast to go to work.
So Nico, tell me, what made you decide to take English lessons?
You know, it's really just from work. You know, my work, I need to communicate a lot about my ideas and convince people to take my ideas to do something. And I need to write a lot of docs and doing a lot of presentations. I wrote a few docs and I did a few presentations, and people seems to be, you know, confused by what I'm trying to, you know, convey. That's what motivated me to take English classes, so I can, you know, communicate more clearly and concisely and, you know, make people less confused.
Okay, great. Do you have the impression that your English speech has improved, your communication?
Yeah, I think definitely. So I still need improvements, but when I first came here, I was not able to say a complete sentence. You know, I was like jumping words altogether. Well, I was able to communicate with a combination of, you know, jumping words and body languages, but it's like not a complete sentence. So I was like doing a lot of body language at that time.
Okay, well, it's been quite a journey for you, and you've done an amazing job so far. So congratulations on that.
Thank you.
And when do you speak to native English speakers?
Well, like since I'm living in the United States, I need to speak to, you know, native English speakers at all different occasions, like to my coworkers at work and off work, and also like just in everyday life when I go shopping, you know, visiting doctors, visiting gyms, traveling, hanging out with friends and chatting with strangers who are native speakers.
Okay, and what do you enjoy about talking to native English speakers?
It's like talking with everyone else. It's like be able to clearly communicate and exchange ideas, which is really good, especially learning from like people from different cultural backgrounds will just open my eyes.
Right. It's important for making connections, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, having conversations. So is there anything that you find difficult about speaking to native English speakers?
Yeah, I guess the most difficult part is that it is always happen not in the, perfect quiet setting like what I had in an English exam. It's always like in a noisy background and just happened really quick in a second, and they just say something and I didn't get it. For example, if it is printed out in front of me, or if it is like they say it really slowly with a subtitle, I may be able to get it, but like not in the, you know, the real world setting. So that's where I find it most difficult.
Right, right. And can you tell us a story about a time when you experienced miscommunication with a native speaker?
Yeah, this has been, you know, in my mind for a long time. I just keep thinking about it. So like this happened like a few years ago. A good friend of mine, like I met from work, was visiting me from Australia with his coworker. So we went hiking together on a weekend. So like during the hike, we were chatting like about just random things. And the coworker was talking about like taking his 1-year-old son on a very long hike. He said something like, "My son passed out after a few hours of hike." I mistook it for the other phrase. So he said it so casually, and I was like so shocked. I said, "What? He passed out?" And my friend, he definitely realized that I misunderstood it. And he was like, "Oh, he meant like his son fell into sleep." So I was like, "Oh my God, why am I acting so shocked?" And the person was like so confused for one moment, but he definitely like, I think he realized I mistook it for as well.
Oh, goodness. So you thought he meant that his little son had passed away instead of passed
exactly.
Out?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I was like, why he said it so casually, you know, what happened to him?
Yeah. Oh my goodness. And he just meant that to say that the little boy was so tired, right?
Yeah, exactly.
That he fell asleep.
Yeah, you know, like in the English exam, they would just list pass out, pass away as options, and for me to, you know, like fill in the blank. And it's like, it's an easy peek there. But like when he really said it out, just, you know, in real time, it's quite hard for me to, you know, realize it.
Yeah, and that's an example of miscommunication using phrasal verbs, right? Passed out, passed away. Yeah. Oh, goodness. Yeah. Well, that is a funny story. So, how did the friend react? The one who was telling about his little son.
Well, he was definitely so confused why I was appeared to be so shocked.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Nico, for telling us about that story. And have a great day.
Thank you for having me. You too. Have a great day.
Great to hear from Nico and how well she speaks. The story she told was interesting. What was the misunderstanding? How did it come about?
Yes, as we said earlier, phrasal verbs can change meaning depending on the particle. In Nico's story, there were two phrasal verbs, to pass out and to pass away. Pass out means to lose consciousness. For example, she passed out from hunger, he passed out from the heat. Whereas to pass away is an indirect way of saying to die. It's an indirect word, a phrase, that when we want to talk about difficult situations, we avoid using the direct word. So when we say he passed away, it avoids using he died. The problem is that when you say he passed away, it can be misunderstood, whereas to die is very direct and doesn't cause any problems. So in Nico's case, she confused to pass out with to pass away.
So the father wanted to say that his son was exhausted. When the father said his son passed out, he didn't mean it literally in that the son had lost consciousness. What he meant was that his son had fallen asleep. This is an exaggeration, of course. This expression is very common. For example, "I was so tired, I passed out on the sofa." In Nico's story, she thought the father said the son had passed away, so died. Her reaction was shock because the father didn't look troubled at all.
And was it a problem?
Well, it could have been if Nico hadn't had her friend with her to intervene and interpret what the father said. How can a non-native speaker deal with such situations?
Well, I think the non-native speaker has to take cue from the facial expressions, in this case of the father, and his lack of distress. Nico must have realized that she had misinterpreted in some way. So in future, she would need to check that she'd understood correctly. Maybe say something like, "Sorry, I don't think I understand." Or, "Could you say that again, please? Could you explain?"
Now that we've heard from a non-native speaker, why don't we hear from a native speaker about examples of phrasal verbs used in getting together with a friend?
So here I am talking to my son Yarik about his use of everyday English and the types of phrases he might use when inviting someone for coffee and during the meeting itself. So Yarik, tell me first about yourself. What is your background? Where are you from?
Well, I'm raised in the West Midlands, born in Wales, but raised in the West Midlands of England to Irish-Polish heritage.
And what kind of accent do you think you have when you're speaking English?
I think my accent is fairly standard English. I think if you're from the West Midlands, you may be able to detect certain words I say in a Midlands way. People from the South can tell that I'm not from the South when I say certain words like bath and grass rather than bath and grass. But other than that, I think they just think I'm from up north. People from up north probably don't really know where I'm from. People from outside the UK can tell I'm English, but other than that, it's not immediately obvious.
Yarik, if you want to meet up with a friend or a colleague, what phrases would you use?
Well, I think initially, if I was getting in touch with someone and wanted to meet up, I think one of the first things I would say is for, say, for example, if it was the next day I wanted to meet up, I might say something along the lines of, "What are you up to tomorrow? Have you got much on?" Or I might say, "Do you want to catch up soon?"
And if you were to try and arrange to meet?
So I might say something like, "Do you want to check out that new place in town? Let's try out that place, that new place on the corner, for example." Or something along those lines. "Shall we head down to so-and-so?"
You know, when you want to order, what kind of terms would you use?
Well, first of all, just before we got there, I would message the person and say, "Let me know if anything comes up, just in case they have to cancel for whatever reason." But yes, once there, ordering would be a case of, "I think I might have the something." "I think I might have" actually means "I will have." It's not as tentative as it comes across. You know, if you're ordering from the menu and you say, "I think I might have this," it means you will have this. You might say, "I'll try the something," or yeah, "Something looks good."
Yes, it's quite noticeable sometimes how in UK English things are much more tentative, what we call understated sometimes. And then how would you go about asking the person about, you know, what they've been doing, the latest news, whatever?
Common phrase would be like, "What's going on with you? What's the latest? What's up in your world?" Or something along those lines. "Have you heard from X, Y, or Z?"
Yeah. And then say that you wanted to leave, you needed to go. Is there any particular phrase you might use to finish the meeting, to let the other person know that you need to leave?
Yeah, you know, there's phrases like, "I need to get going," "I need to set off."
And then, of course, when you want, you've made it known that you want to leave, how about paying the bill? What kind of phrases would you use there?
It depends on who's paying the bill. But if it's me, I'll say something along the lines of, "I'll get this," "I've got this," or "My treat" is a common one.
Okay, well, thanks for that. We think we've got quite a good collection of phrasal verbs there in those expressions. So thanks very much.
My pleasure. Thank you.
So, Erica, what did you think of that exchange? Any observations?
Well, Elizabeth, there were a few terms that might not be familiar to non-native speakers. For instance, there were several phrasal verbs used in the dialogue, such as meet up, catch up, try out, be up to, and set off.
Yes, that's true. There were quite a few phrasal verbs there. And if we just look at one example of a phrasal verb that can be confusing, it's to set off. Yannick said that he needed to set off. He meant that he needed to go, to leave, to carry on with his day. But I can also set off fireworks, which means I ignite them. Thieves may set off a fire alarm when they break into a house. They activate the fire alarm. You can also set a person off when you provoke them in some way. Don't talk to your grandfather about taxes, or you'll set him off again, and he'll never stop complaining. And finally, a very different meaning, to contrast or compliment something. That blue really sets off the colour of your eyes. So a phrasal verb can be very versatile in meaning, which of course also causes confusion. Erica, do you have any tips for our listeners on learning phrasal verbs?
I do, Elizabeth. I think it's a good idea to create mind maps to group the phrasal verbs together and learn them in context. So you can group the expressions according to their meaning and not by the verb. For example, you wouldn't want to use a list of phrasal verbs that all start with pass, but rather you'd organize them by topic, such as getting together with a friend. And in that case, we can use the phrasal verbs meet up, catch up, try out, be up to, and set off.
But do you think our non-native speakers really need to learn phrasal verbs?
Well, people can get by without using phrasal verbs, and everyone will understand what they're saying. But if they're communicating with native speakers, they need to be able to understand phrasal verbs because native speakers use them all the time. If a person wants to extend and develop their use of English, they need to start using phrasal verbs.
And if you want to learn more about phrasal verbs, you could read our blog on the topic on our website, proenglishsolutions.com. There you can also find out about how we can help you improve your use of everyday English.
Thank you all for listening to this, our pilot podcast from the series Everyday English with Erica and Elizabeth. Look out for our upcoming full series. Until then, stay tuned and enjoy exploring everyday English with Erica and Elizabeth.
Bye from us both.